Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the August issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled Using Herbicide for Cheatgrass Management in the Nebraska Panhandle. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by the author, Dr. Mitch Stevenson, who's a University of Nebraska Lincoln Extension Range Management Specialist. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate being here.
Well, Dr. Stevenson, you've been doing some work for several years now, looking at some different herbicide options as a tool to manage invasive annual grasses, thinking here specifically of cheatgrass. Tell us a little more about some of the work you've been doing and what you've been learning.
Yeah. So I've been here about 10 years now at the University of Nebraska, and really fortunate to be in the western part of the state doing research on rangelands, just because they cover 2/3 of the area out here. And ever since I've been here, one of the first things that came up was the cheatgrass problem in the panhandle. And when you look at Nebraska as a whole, there's a couple things that I would say are big challenges to our rangelands. As we get into the eastern part of the state, it tends to be more of the woody encroachment. But here in the western part of the state, I think it's definitely the annual invasive grasses that have come into some of these areas that have a large amount of seed production in these areas. Some of the areas have go back land, which complicates things a little bit more, that just opens up a little more opportunity for some of these annual invasive grasses. We've been kind of looking at a lot of different things. We've looked at grazing, we've looked at different types of management, and herbicide is one of them. And there's a handful of different herbicides out there that are labeled for rangeland use, labeled for annual invasive grasses. And so, having all these tools in your toolbox, and then also understanding where cheatgrass is at is pretty critical, I think, to the management of it. And we've done some work with some remote sensing programs. The Rangeland Analysis Platform is one. If folks are interested at looking at it on their place, it's rangelands.app. They can pull it up, and they have a layer on there that folks can look at their place, pick out. Now, it's annual forbs and grasses, so it's not just cheatgrass, but it would be a combination of both annual invasive grasses and forbs. And so we did some work, had a student recently that pulled up all the panhandle counties. Really what we were trying to do is look at where is cheatgrass and annual invasive grasses and forbs the most prevalent. And so in that study, she found that the highest coverage was in Banner County, Scotts Bluff County, and in Dawes County. Now there was annual forb and grass cover across all the counties in the panhandle, but those tended to be the most. Sheridan and Garden tended to be the lowest in terms of the amount of annual forbs and grasses. And so kind of have these three counties, and we've done most of our work in this Scotts Bluff Banner County area because it's closer here to our research and extension center. When I started here, we started doing work with imazapic, which is Trade Dame Plateau, and we found that it gave us pretty good control. We got about 1 year of control out of it, and then typically that cheatgrass was back into those areas. And we also found that some of our grasses that we have out here can be a little sensitive to imazapic, and we kind of looked at that a little bit. But for the most part, it did a nice job, and for the most part, most of our native grasses were fairly tolerant of it. And so here recently, I'd say in the last 4 or 5 years, another product, Indazaflam, has come about. Its trade name is Rejuvra. This Rejuvra seems to have a greater length of control. We've had some studies where we've got 3 years of pretty good control out of it. We're still tracking some of these, 3 or 4 years of really good control. And oftentimes we get the best control when we combine the imazapic and the indazaflam together. And that kind of works in that it takes care of those that may have already germinated when you put it out in the fall. And then the Rejuvra will be able to maintain that control over several years.
Dr. Stevenson, talk a little about how these two chemicals act and why the combination together seems to work much better.
Yeah, so we've done a little bit of work where we've just put out the Rejuvra alone and then looked at them in combination with each other. And so, part of it is that really that germination is where we find that it causes the most problems. And so the plateau does the work that it takes care of those plants that have germinated. So if they've germinated in the fall already before you put the herbicide out, the plateau is able to remove those plants out of the system, and then the Rejuvera can kick in. If you don't have the plateau, anything that's already germinated, the Rejuvera wouldn't control that. And so it would be a whole nother year before that Rejuvera would kick in, or that Indazaflam would kick in. And so where we have sprayed in the fall with re only Rejuvera, we typically didn't see any control that first year, but we did see control the second year of the study. But we did find that the control usually wasn't quite as good. We didn't have as complete a control as we did if we took out that first year with the plateau and then had that the Rejuvera to kind of follow that up.
So the Rejuvera acts by inhibiting these annual seeds from germinating or coming to full plant growth. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
As we think about then how does cheatgrass work itself, thinking about its life cycle, why does the combination work so well with these annual grasses?
Well, I think it's because partly because they have multiple germination events, and so it's hard to capture when that's going to happen. That germination could start if we get a little bit of precipitation and the nights start cooling off here in August. You know, that germination could be already be happening within those plants. And so we get that fall germination. It also can germinate in the spring if conditions are right. Like this last year, I think, you know, it was such a dry fall and winter that I think we saw a lot more germination in the spring than what we did in the fall. And so it partially behind that is yeah, I just think that because cheatgrass is so flexible in how it can germinate and when it can germinate, that having this combination really helps to account for that.
Dr. Stevenson, as we think about these winter annual grasses and specifically thinking about cheatgrass, how long is that seed viable? Because that really does tie together with this product Rejuvera and it's inhibiting annuals from germinating. Those two things kind of are working together a little bit in terms of its having that impact on that seed from becoming a viable plant.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think research would generally suggest that cheatgrass seed will remain viable in the soil for 2 to 3 years. There may be some of that seed that can last a little bit longer than that. And so that's where it's really important to get multiple years of control to really limit the amount of seed that's viable in the soil. And so the longer you can keep that seed from germinating, the better chance of success you have with the herbicide treatment.
As we think about the non-target species, what are some things we should be aware of in using these two products as we think about native range? And that's always been one of my challenges, cautions as we think about broadcast application of herbicide on native range is what's the impact to our non-target species? So maybe speak to that a little bit because there's some data that I think would be relevant as we discuss this as a control option in terms of what might we be doing in terms of impact to native plants.
Yeah, and that's always an important question to think about, especially this broad scale type application, which would be done on some of these areas that have a lot of cheatgrass. And so, you know, typically what we've seen is that in the first year after application, a lot of our annual forbs are much, much lower within those areas that we've been sprayed. Now, our research that we've collected data on, typically that's just that first year that they're reduced. You know, our perennial forbs, we've seen actually a greater amount of perennial forbs in our treated versus our untreated areas. And so it doesn't seem to have much of an impact with them, but it was variable. But generally speaking, we did see a lot of these annual forbs come back into our treated areas as well, which is important. You know, that we do have some really important native annual forbs that are part of our plant community. Some people look at them as a little bit as weeds, but they are important to have out there and within our systems. Now, the plateau, it is important to research that a little bit. We've been fortunate that we haven't really seen too much negative effect on that, but there are some plant species there that are a little bit more susceptible to the plateau. And so it's just really looking into the label, making sure, looking at what your plant community is, those types of things. Yeah.
For folks who are thinking about considering using this, talk through some things you would encourage them to think through as they look at this as an option if they're thinking about using this combination of Plateau and Rejuvera on a range or pasture site. What should they be aware of or consider?
Generally, we talk a lot about, this defending the core, finding those areas that may be at the highest risk, but still have really good perennial grass understory within them. And so, that's really going out and taking a look at the pastures or the areas that you want to treat and making sure that you do have, your species that you would like to come back. Because if you don't, likelihood that you could spray and there's not much there that's going to take its place, then the cheatgrass can likely reinvade much sooner than if you had a really healthy plant community there that you can help along. And so it usually doesn't take much though. I mean, a lot of the places we've gone, a lot of the work we've done would indicate that having a few plants in general square meter probably sufficient to really help them recover and to build resistance into that system after you've treated the herbicide. And so, but you do want to make sure they're there, because as along with the inhibiting the cheatgrass germination, a lot of times it'll take a few years before, for example, if you wanted to go back in and reseed, it's likely going to take a few years after treatment before you can reseed and have that be effective. So just some things there that to think about as far as where you select these places. A few other places that might be of consideration are places that you have that may be at risk of wildfire, around structures and buildings, those types of things, where there is maybe a higher chance that fire could start. So, being strategic about where you choose to put this herbicide out. Now, as with most herbicides, generally it's a fairly expensive endeavor to put this out. And so you may want to kind of really think about a number of acres that you can attack and then go at it from that standpoint. The other things to think about would be, how are you going to graze this afterwards? So, typically we've looked a little bit at it. Other states have looked at it too. Typically, a lot of these sites, if they're in good condition, that you can get out there and graze on them. But it's always good to manage them adaptively. Make sure you're not taking too much, especially that first year after herbicide treatment, and giving them ample recovery time so that you can really build some of that resilience into those native grasses and forbs that you have out there. And so, thinking through all those things before you select a site would be very valuable.
One of the big questions that's going to come to many folks' mind is, if I use this herbicide, what are my grazing options? Talk through with us a little more about that, because we're not only using the herbicide and have an expense there, but if we're also giving up grazing, there's an impact. But then if we're seeing improved production from native plants, that could offset that. Just help us understand the different variables there as we think about grazing management.
Right. And so oftentimes, when we think about cheatgrass, we want to get out on it really early and try to graze as much of that as we can. We've done some research here around Scotts Bluff looking at, are they grazing cheatgrass and native grasses or native grasses? And it's likely they're grazing both. So, when you remove the cheatgrass from that system, if you have a lot of your cool season native grasses, you might want to just defer those a little bit. If you defer those later into the summer, that can go a long ways in just allowing that a little bit of recovery, especially if you've had, or especially if they haven't been managed as well in the past, or you just feel like they need a little bit more rest and recovery that year. So ideally, if you could put that into your rotation or plan that into your grazing, that, okay, this is when I'm going to graze this one at this time this year. And oftentimes it's recommended to remove a little bit of that thatch layer. It's recommended that you do graze them in the year that you do spray. And so if you graze them that year that you spray, you go out in the fall and you spray the herbicide. If you can just rotate that in a rotation to where you're not going right out onto those grasses, I think that would be ideal. But generally speaking, as long as your stocking rate's right, you should be able to still manage that. And a lot of it is probably more in line with what kind of precipitation are you getting, going into that spring as well. Because that's really probably going to be a big driver of most of your grazing management anyways. And so, like for example, this year it was just so dry. And so we got about to May 15th, and we had some pastures that we'd treated with the herbicide, and we just decided, we're going to hold off on those. We just want to give them their best chance of success. And with the drought that's happening, we just felt like we needed to hold off a little bit on those. And we got pretty good rains in May. We got pretty good rains in June. And so we did end up turning cattle out on them, but we dropped our stocking rate on those just a little bit, just as a precaution in that more than anything. We were just being a little bit more conservative, just because we thought it might be a drought, and it ended up being an okay year for precipitation. And so I think managing them as adaptively as possible is going to be your best bet. So if you can think through, like, okay, this pasture here's where I want to spray, and I'll be able to hold off them a little bit longer in the spring next year. That's probably ideal in that situation.
So what I hear you saying is there's not any significant grazing restrictions on pasture that's had this herbicide applied. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
I guess also as we think about something you mentioned earlier, what's the remnant plant community that's there in terms of native desirable species? Is there anything we need to be doing to try to encourage those plants to be more robust, fill in the gaps in terms of when we take out the cheatgrass as a competitor? Is there anything we can do to enhance the recovery of that pasture towards a more desirable plant community?
Yeah, and I think this goes back to that grazing management, first and foremost, you want to make sure that you know what species are out there, right? If it's, if you have a predominantly cool season or a predominantly warm season or a mixture of both of those species, that's going to be a little bit different in how this looks. But mostly, is that we want to make sure that we're giving that plant community the recovery it needs. And so oftentimes, the rule of thumb generally is to take half, leave half. This isn't always the case, but I think on a lot of our native upland rangelands, it's a pretty good rule of thumb to follow. The more leaf material you can leave out there after the cattle go out, the better chance of recovery that plant's going to have, building bigger and resilience. And so yeah, I mean, I think getting out there and grazing, making sure you're not overgrazing, and then giving that long recovery period is really going to help to build that plant community. I think it's just generally shown in rangeland that that's one of the principles of just good grazing management and making sure that our plants continue to thrive.
Dr. Stevenson, what are some other things you think folks should think through or understand if they're thinking about utilizing this combination of herbicides to control cheatgrass on native range or pasture?
I think the cost is one thing. I mean, really penciling out what those numbers would look like for your situation. And also, if there is opportunities to talk with some outside funding, like for example, some of the programs through the NRCS or others, it might be worthwhile to look into some of those to see if that fits within a system and it becomes an opportunity that you can go down. Overall, though, really penciling that out, though, I think is pretty critical. I mean, and it is one of those things that you might need to really be strategic about where you put it out and really pick and choose, which ones are you going to manage with cheatgrass and which ones would you like to manage as your no cheatgrass areas.
Dr. Stevenson, thanks for your time today and for this research. I know from my perspective, it's pretty exciting. I think in terms of having an option that we can get effective cheatgrass control on native range and pasture. Again, I think long term, we need to still see what's the 5, 10 years out from herbicide application and how quickly do we see that cheatgrass pressure come back. But this is, I think, for many folks, an opportunity that does at least give them a chance to control cheatgrass on native range and pasture. And also, I think other some invasive annuals, which we didn't talk about today, that it appears that this can be somewhat beneficial as well. So another tool in the toolbox to help us try to maintain our plant species on native range and pasture. Thanks again for joining me today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good point there that, another annual invasive grass that we haven't seen, but I just want to bring it up because it is pretty prevalent in northeast Wyoming, is an annual grass called ventonata, as well as another one called Medusa head. And so, those are both other annual invasive species that, hopefully they haven't moved into Nebraska yet, but we need to be on the lookout for them. Wyoming has a really great program that they can go out and get that controlled as soon as it comes up in some populations, so that they can really try to limit the spread of that. And so, I think we're going to see more and more of these challenging species come into our area, and they tend to really thrive on some of these swings in years, these droughts, but then really wet years and then droughts that we've seen recently. Cheatgrass in particular, we've seen there's been a few studies. One that was conducted recently here at the Scotts Bluff Monument was part of this study that has generally showed this cyclical pattern of cheatgrass kind of booming and then kind of retracting and then booming and then retracting. But in general, that trend line has been going up over the last several decades. And so it really, annual invasive grasses are really going to be a challenge, and as well as some of these other species that we need to keep an eye out on.
For more information on the topic that was discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. The title of the article, Using Herbicide for Cheatgrass Management in the Nebraska Panhandle. If you'd like to visit with Dr. Mitch Stevenson directly about the research he's been involved with, you can find his contact information at the Panhandle Research and Extension Center website.